From the Sky News Centre at 5. In the last few minutes, the result of the West Midlands mayoral election has been announced.
The Conservative Party candidate is duly elected as mayor for the West Midlands Combined Authority.
Andy Street beat the Labour candidate in the second round. The Tories have had the biggest gains in the local council elections across England and Wales. Labour's seen losses, including control of two councils in Scotland. The Lib Dems also lost seats, but UKIP's seen the biggest collapse. We now know how the government intends to improve air quality. A draft plan is finally out, as Claire Gregory reports.
Air pollution is linked to an estimated 40,000 early deaths each year in the UK. It affects 9-year-old Amelie's asthma.
At first I would start coughing and then my throat would feel a bit funny, so then I would start wheezing.
Following a legal battle, the government have now revealed how they'll tackle it. They want to reduce speed bumps, introduce clean air zones in England, and a targeted scrappage scheme for the oldest and most polluting vehicles. London Mayor Sadiq Khan's called the plans toothless.
And this goes nowhere near addressing the issues and challenges we face.
They'll now go out to consultation.
The boss of a construction firm's been jailed for a year after a woman crushed by falling windows in central London was killed. 43-year-old Amanda Teffler died after walking past a building site in Mayfair in 2012. A man's fighting for his life after a helicopter crashed in Buckinghamshire. He was one of three people injured when the aircraft came down at Wickham Airpark this morning. Ground Services manager Andy Nunnan was one of the first people to arrive on the scene.
We've had a helicopter on its side, smoking from the gearbox engine area. Luckily, a local hero, a paramedic, turned up and helped us assess some very severe injuries.
And England's cricketers have thrashed Ireland in the first one-day international at Bristol. Adil Rashid took 5 for 27 as England reached their target of 127 with 30 overs and 7 wickets to spare. That's the latest. I'm Annie Joyce.
People have talked to me about engaging with the city, getting involved in consultation, and I've said that you've got to talk to BCFM.
Love Bristol.
Love
BCFM 93.2.
A Bristol kind of love.
It's Friday, it's 5 o'clock. Welcome to BCFM's politics show. Tony Gosling helping me review this week's news. The community activists from Hartcliffe, Kerry Bales and Steve Norman from Avonmouth. Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers is here too. After the 6 o'clock news, a German soldier's arrested for acts preparing a terror attack at Vienna Airport. His plan was to blame this attack on Syrian refugees. How would he get away with that? And why has this hardly been reported in the UK? Why do our press spike the story when a terrorist turns out to be a white non-Muslim? Also, close ties between Israel and ISIS revealed as ISIS apologised for accidentally attacking an Israeli army patrol. And back to our investigations, as we asked, why did the Gestapo pick on Freemasons as well as trade unionists, Jews, the disabled, the mentally ill and gypsies during the Third Reich? Well, that's just one question. A bland series called Inside the Freemasons, airing on Murdoch TV at 8 every Monday evening, is not asking. In fact, the series is so much like an advert for the Freemasons, it may as well have been commissioned and produced by them. We get a review of Sky's Inside the Freemasons from an ex-Freemason himself. Also, sticking with the Nazis, Hitler's deputy Rudolf Hess flew alone to Scotland in 1941 on a secret peace mission just before the Nazis invaded the Soviet Union. But why did he spend the rest of his life alone in Berlin's Spandau prison with no outside contact allowed? What did Hess know? Another investigation from a UBS whistleblower this week, Christoph Miley, with more evidence that the bank are funding ISIS and Al-Qaeda through numbered accounts, just like the 1930s when they funded the Nazis' rise to power and rearmament, the Swiss banksters making lots of money from war and then stealing the money from the victims of that war as well. Plus, Martin Summers' chance to take us on a tour of the world's hotspots in the second hour after six. On to our news review in a minute, but first, Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Tonight, lows of 10 Celsius and dry. This weekend, highs of 16. Cloudy tomorrow, but sunny spells on Sunday. Highs of 18 Celsius. Next week, plenty of sunny spells and the occasional shower. Next weekend, that's the 13th and 14th of May, highs around 18. Again, sunshine and heavy showers, though, next weekend. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Helping us review this week's news are community activists from Hartcliffe, Kerry Bales. Hi, Kerry.
Hello.
And also Steve Norman from Avonmouth. Hi, Steve.
Hello, Tony.
Now, let's just begin by asking you, first of all, what your impressions are of the results of this Metro Mayor election, Steve, because we've heard it's actually less than a third of people actually bothered even to turn out to vote. That's the people who are registered to vote.
Do we really want the Metro Mayor? That says, doesn't it? You know, you got 29% turnout. Do we really want a Metro Mayor? But let's look at the influence Marvin's played on this, shall we? Marvin's not exactly lived up to form, has he? Surrounded by, I don't know, an iron fist of PR and political advisers and what have you, too frightened to come on radio and give an interview all year. And
that's right. Well, that's actually, I hate to say it, but that is kind of the reason that I've invited you on, Steve, and Kerry, is because Marvin, we arranged for Marvin to be here, sitting where you're sitting now, back in February. It's in his diary. I was told by the Bristol City Council press office, yes, it's there, and it's in his diary and everything, beginning of the week, and yet I was then told that, oh dear, no, he won't be able to come, and he can't come, and he's not going to come, which is rather irritating, because there's lots of interesting questions to ask Marvin. It seems to me we get these, we get these politicians who are very happy to say they're going to be into, as Marvin has done many times, transparency and openness. But when it actually comes to coming, sitting down in the chair and asking some possibly awkward questions, they don't want to do it.
No, they don't. They don't like emailing people back either. I've emailed Marvin several times about various different issues, and he doesn't really want to talk to me.
So what is it that you, Kerry, let's start with you, what is it that you would like to be asking Marvin tonight, where are you here?
About the cuts in my area. You know, he's a Labour mayor, and he's made cuts in the most deprived, poorest areas in the city and in society, and that goes against what Labour is all about.
But he would say, if he was sitting here, I'm sure he'd say, well, sorry Kerry, but these are cuts from central government, we don't really have any choice, we just simply, money just simply isn't there.
Well, that he probably would say that, but it's at the end of the day the buck stops with him. He's pretty much said that they're his cuts, he's supporting the Tory austerity.
I think Kerry's really summed that up there. Let's really look at this word austerity. Did Marvin have to introduce his cuts? No. Do you believe that Theresa May would have bankrupted Bristol? No. Do I believe, in hindsight, now, would he have made the cuts with the general election being called? I think he had a prime opportunity to get a real deal from Bristol, from May, but he's like a poodle. Or as the independents now calling him, the pink poodle.
So are you one of these Blairites then that sees people like Marvin as a problem, and they're not actually capable of leading the party like someone like Tony Blair used to?
I'm a true socialist, Tony. I believe in standing up for the working man, the deprived, the underprivileged. Marvin, what is Marvin? He's a puppet. He's got people behind him running his show. This great political advisor, Sam Eddy. Oh, no, that's Kevin Slocum. I do apologise to Kevin. Sam Eddy, the new PR. Well, come on, Sam, bring it on. You know, the general public want a year from our mayor. We don't want a year from the puppet masters in the back.
Now, old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers, one of the things I've picked up over the last few weeks is that there hasn't been 100% total support from the whole of the regional Labour Party for the candidacy of Leslie Mansell. Do you think that there's any truth to those rumours? Because, I mean, she is seen as kind of more of a Corbynite than possibly an Owen Smithite. And so do you think the whole of the Labour machine has been doing absolutely everything it can to get her elected?
I haven't got any inside knowledge to put into that. I think she would be probably on the Corbyn wing of the party, and therefore presumably unpalatable to some. But she did pretty well. Unfortunately, not enough to win. But again, we come back to the question, do we need a Metro mayor at all? And that's a bigger issue, isn't it?
For anyone that's not heard, those of you that don't listen to the BBC and things like that, it's Conservative Tim Bowles, who didn't turn up at our hustings last week. In fact, the Conservatives have made a bit of a habit on this show of not turning up to hustings. And of course, Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn now are saying that they won't be turning up to the leadership debates for the general election, which is really does show, seems like both the main parties of the country are cowards and they won't challenge each other on live TV. Sounds a little bit peculiar. So with Tim Bowles not turning up last week, what he said was, he told me that there was a senior minister coming to Bristol and that he would have to show him around and they were going to be doing some media, this sort of thing. Well, I had a look on Saturday. I couldn't see any senior minister that had come to Bristol on Friday. Forgive me for wondering whether that was just an excuse not to come on the radio and discuss these things live, because it does seem like the Linton Crosby style of PR nowadays in all these main parties. Martin, I'll ask you this particularly. Seems to be that they're trying to actually control the debate from the top, and the idea is that if you can get out your right message, strong and stable government on the BBC every night without it being questioned or challenged, you can win an election now.
Well, I think that's definitely happened. We've all seen the thick of it, the famous sitcom, as it were. I'm afraid that is the way modern politics has gone, and it's a shame, really. But I think Corbyn, to some extent, rebels against that. I think it was a mistake by him to say he wouldn't go. If Theresa May doesn't want to go on telly, just say, right, you don't have to be on it. But I think it was a mistake by Corbyn to say, well, if she's not going to do it, I'm not going to do it. I feel like, well, why give him a free goal, you know?
So any thoughts from you two about why and whether Corbyn should do these national leadership debate? Maybe you first, Steve.
Well, I think people are underestimating Corbyn. I think he's a great statesman. I think it appeals to the young. And let's be honest, it's the next generation that are going to matter. My generation's had its day.
Well, the trouble is, look, many young people, I don't know about most, but certainly many, haven't even registered to vote. They can't vote.
Well, they should be getting out there and pushing for more voters in the Labour Party. I read somewhere today that on the Mansell mayoral thing, if another 500 Labour Party voters had come out in each constituency, she would have won. But at the end of the day, she lost. A loss is a loss. We have to move on. Did anybody really want the Metro Mayor? I don't think so. 29% is a bit like George Ferguson's first term in office as a mayor. Low turnout. George paid the price for his own narcissistic being. And we end up with another person who's gone out, swept the board, but in reality is no better than George, because at least with George, he had a voice of his own. With Marvin, we have a puppet.
Okay, you've said that quite a few times now.
Well, he is, he's a puppet.
Kerry, what do you make of this? The idea that we're going to have a leadership debate. I mean, ITV have said that they won't actually have an empty chair, but it looks like neither Theresa May nor Jeremy Corbyn will be there. So you've got a debate with all the minor parties, not by either of the two people who are actually likely to become Prime Minister.
If Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn want people to vote, then they have to get out there. They can't just leave it to everybody else. If they need to, the public need to make an informed decision. And if you've got the two main parties not going out there and speaking for themselves, then they're not going to get that, are they?
So what do you put this down to then?
I don't know. It just seems like Theresa May started it. It's tit for tat. What is Theresa May hiding? Why does she not want to speak publicly?
Martin?
I think she doesn't want to speak publicly because she doesn't want to debate. That's not her style at all, is it? What they're going to do is going to act and they're going to bang on this strong and stable government, blah, blah, blah. And they're hoping, I mean, when she's gone around the country in a call centre up north, All the call centre workers have gone home and they're just busting loads of Tory supporters. So they, even when she says she's not, doesn't want to go on the TV because she's going out to meet people, they're absolutely trying to control the people she meets. She met somebody in Dudley who said, well, why don't you go on the TV? And she was very embarrassed. So they've cut that. It was in the local newspapers up there, but it didn't make it any further. And they're just, you know, this is actually... They're trying to bamboozle people. You know, this is all. This is like being forced to sign your life savings away to somebody who's turned up on the doorstep. You know, just sign a blank cheque and leave it all to us. We're the ruling class. We know how to do things. Leave, you know, you don't need to bother. We just want you to put your hands up and go, yeah, 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 and then we've got 5 years of Tory government.
So let's just look at the actual results. 29.62% turnout for yesterday's Metro Mayor election. Just over 30%. That's 30.88%. That's what, 31% in Bristol, with nearly 200,000 ballots cast. Looking at the statistics, right, it's difficult to say because of the fact that this is a new type of election that we're having here as the Metro Mayor. What the percentage Labour versus Conservative, they're obviously the two top runners they've been in this, it is 33%. If you look at the MPs in the constituencies, you've got six out of the nine constituencies are Tory, so three out of the nine constituencies are Labour. So that's Labour at the moment has got, in the constituencies that constitute this Metro Mayor area, they've got a 33%. They got 33% of the vote. If you're just looking at comparing them to the Conservatives, ignoring the rest, then when you look at the, it's a very different picture when you're looking at the Metro Mayor, though, because there's only a very, actually quite a small gap between Conservative Tim Bowles, who got 70,300 votes, and then Labour's Leslie Mansell, who got 65,923 votes. So, say, 66,000 versus 70,000. Now, you're talking there about, well, just do a little bit of quick maths, that's about 6-7%, so we're talking about 43%. So in a way, what Labour's done in this Metro Mayor election is go from around 33% of the vote compared to the Tories, Steve, and now up to 43%. So we're hearing all this news on the national media, oh, it's a total disaster for Labour, and Labour have lost a lot of seats around the country, but certainly here in the region they've done quite well with that, with those going up from 33% of the MPs to 43% now of the vote. They've really given Tim Bowles a run for his money.
That statement, Tony, but you know, Metro Mayor, isn't it? We want the mayor, as I say. You know, let's see this reflected in the general election. There are some. Kerry McCarthy's not a safe seat, really. She's only 3,000 majority. Bristol North West, the Blairite, Darren Jones is coming back for another pop. You know, will he ship Charlotte? No, he's got more chance of winning the lottery.
So do you think that Labour just aren't putting up candidates who are credible? What if, and if so, why is that?
I think the Labour Party at this moment in time in Bristol is fighting amongst itself. It's got in-house fighting, as I continuously to say. We've got a mayor that is a puppet with puppet masters behind pulling the strings. We've got major housing crisis where we're being told, oh, no, we didn't promise you 2,000 houses a year. Well, actually, Marvin, I was wondering when I could come along and see the first 2,000 you offered last year, because your year is up, and you did offer it. It's documented.
I think, just a minute, because it takes much more than a year to build a house, doesn't it? I mean, well, you could certainly say that in 3 years' time, at the end of Marvin's term of office, as he built his 1,700 houses he said he's going to build.
Well, no, Tony, let's step back. When Marvin was out on the campaign trail last year, he promised the citizens of Bristol 2,000 houses per year of his mayorship. Now, his manifesto did rightly say something else, but it seems the manifesto got hidden in the back pocket. He promised all this housing. So, on my calculation, we were a year on from the last mayoral when he was elected. I want me 2,000 houses, Marvin. Where are they? You know, simple as, you promised it. Where are they, Marvin? I don't want to... Oh, we could maybe contact Lego and they could help us build some. You know, this is the reality of it all, really.
Well, we'll see in 3 years' time. Anyway, Kerry, what for you are the real issues over in Hartcliffe? Because often places like where you, I mean, we've had Theresa May this week come to actually came to Bristol, didn't she? The Guardian accused her in this. I'll just read out the headline of the article: Theresa May accused of hiding from voters on Bristol visit. Criticism follows similar complaints in Cornwall that reporters were shut in a room and banned from filming the Prime Minister. Theresa May is accused of hiding from residents on a Bristol housing estate, shutting reporters out of a factory visit in Cornwall. A tightly controlled stage management of the Conservative election campaign came under scrutiny. The Prime Minister addressed a social club on a housing estate in Brislington in the Labour-held seat of Bristol East, where she urged voters in the South West not to return to backing the Lib Dems. However, residents of the estate were not invited and gathered outside waiting for a glimpse of the Prime Minister, while the audience inside was made up of Conservative activists only from across Bristol and South Gloucestershire. It came after a furore over May's earlier visit to the marginal seat of St Ives in Cornwall, where the county's biggest news website was banned from filming the Prime Minister's visit to a factory. I mean, I suppose we would get the same sort of thing if Theresa May was to come to Hartcliffe, Kerry, wouldn't we? What if she did come to Hartcliffe, and if you were there, and you put your hand up and you were chosen to ask her, what would you be talking to Theresa May about?
Well, I tell her that she's not strong and stable. She's completely out of touch with society. There are people with jobs using food banks. There are people with jobs that can't afford to pay their rent that then go on to sleep on the streets. Like, what is she thinking? What is strong and stable about that? It's her government that have done this. You know, it's just ridiculous. Nurses using food banks.
Well, we had the discussion on Andrew Marr, didn't we, on Sunday, early Sunday morning, with Theresa May being asked why it was that nurses were having to go to food banks, and she said that there were all sorts of complicated reasons why they had to.
That's ridiculous. They're using food banks because they haven't got any money, because the NHS is in a state. And this is things that a Tory government have done. There shouldn't be any need for food banks. People with good jobs, working families, are using food banks. You know, it's not just there for the poor. This is one step away from the workhouses, you know, with temporary accommodation. It's pretty much the same thing. We're going backwards, not forwards.
Well, we're being told that work makes you free, aren't we? Do you remember that phrase from the concentration camps?
A big sign as well.
Yeah, from the concentration camps. Work makes you free, apparently. But the thing is, various surveys, not least of which is by the Roundtree Trust, is saying that work is no longer a route out of poverty. So
definitely
why are
not.
We being told to get a job when actually in certain occasions you're actually worse off when you get a job and you can't feed your family and certainly not pay the rent as well?
You are, absolutely. If you're in social housing, some council houses are cheap and easy to rent. If you go out to work, you can still rent them when you come off of housing benefit. A lot of social homes, they're at least £60 a week more expensive. So, you know, the average working family can't even afford to rent a social house, let alone a private one. You know, why is that? If that's not austerity, I don't know what is.
Well, look, Kerry, give us if you don't mind, because I know you're on the Neighbourhood Partnership over there, some examples of the sorts of things that people in Hartcliffe are going through at the moment.
Well, for instance, well, this time next year, people are going to be on a universal credit. So people in Hartcliffe that have never, ever had to pay their rent, they will have to go and pay it. You know, the housing benefit will be abolished, so that extra money won't go to your landlord, it'll go into your account, and we've got nowhere to pay our rent. Nowhere. You know, it's...
Hang on, you've got a place in Hartcliffe, I'm pretty sure, up until recently anyway, where you just go and pay your rent there, don't you? It's a sort of council office of some sort, isn't it?
Closed down, without a thought to the after effects, with just week's notice.
So when did that happen?
The 31st of March. You know, that Marvin and Asher knew they were closing that in February, so surely they should have made other alternatives where people can make payments back in September.
Well, look, the Conservatives will say to you, hang on a minute, but people should be paying rent. Even if they've got very little income, you've got to pay rent to live.
You have to pay rent, but with council rents, if you pay in the post office by direct debit or online, you have to pay in advance. You don't get your wages, you don't get your benefits in advance. So why should you have to pay in advance? It's ridiculous.
Martin, what's going on here?
Well, yeah, universal credit has been deliberately designed in such a way. It was Ian Duncan Smith's desire to kind of reform the habits of the paupers. So they'd said that they're going to pay people their rents, and then they've got to pay the rents to the landlords, and so that they get to use their, you know, manage their own money and all the rest of it. Which, of course, in one thing, you could say, well, maybe that's okay. But you've got to remember, a lot of people can't manage money, and that's why it was their landlords were paid. And of course, the landlords, the private sector landlords, immediately turned around and said, well, we're not going to rent to those people. So you've got a situation where people can't get social housing, and they can't get private rented accommodation either, because private landlords will not rent to people on universal credit. And of course, it's because of the rules of universal credit. And it's quite deliberate, and it's stupid. And that's one of the reasons why it's taken them so long to roll universal credit out throughout the country, is because the design of the system is just wrong. It just doesn't work. Loads of people are going to lose their housing. I mean, a big buy-to-let landlord, Tory voting buy-to-let landlord in the south east of England, said, well, in that case, we don't want anybody on social credit or universal credit in our houses. What we want is East Europeans who are working, who will pay the rent directly to us. And you couldn't divide and rule, you couldn't make it clearer, could you? And the other thing about universal credit is you don't get any money at all for the first 6 weeks. How are people supposed to cope?
Well, this is why more and more people, of course, are living in tents, because they've been evicted from their homes. They're not prepared to just line a shop doorway, and they're pitching tents around the city. I think we're probably going to be seeing more of this. But, I mean, I do wonder, Martin, do you think there's a reason why the Conservative Party don't like being in a toxic, what they would see, toxic environment like we are now, asking these really difficult questions? I mean, someone like Linton Crosby wouldn't really like that, would he?
Well, no, I mean, they're definitely under heavy manners at the minute. You know, they've gone for this kind of rush election, like a kind of snap penalty, as it were. And now they're just trying to, you know, they just want to rush the ball over the line. That's what they're trying to do.
I'd just like to make it clear that I've invited onto this programme today all of our local MPs, Conservative and Labour. So that's Jack Napresti, Charlotte Leslie, Karen Smith, Kerry McCarthy, Thangam Debonair, all onto this programme. Didn't receive a reply from any of them. Plus, I also invited Stephen Williams. At least I did get a reply from him, saying that he's got too much personal stuff. I imagine he's rather tired after his campaign for Metro Mayor, as well as the Green Metro Mayor candidate, Darren Hall, said he'd be having a drink this time of the day. He's had enough of the campaign too. So just to let you know, other parties have been invited, but Martin, they do seem to be, particularly the Conservatives, and we had this and we had our hustings on this programme back in 2015 for the general election. The Conservatives just don't seem to want to turn up for these hustings.
Well, what seems to happen is when you've got elections on, it's not just the Conservatives, but especially them, the kind of PR spinners take over, and they basically say, they don't want to come and be asked a load of critical questions. They want to, they just want to bang out slogans.
Karen Smith is the only person who's actually agreed to come on out of the Labour MPs ever since the Owen Smith leadership contest against Jeremy Corbyn. So the same sort of thing is going on in the Labour Party, Martin.
Well, I mean, as you know, all of these MPs have been on this show before, all of them. So it's
and Tim Bowles, to be fair to him.
Yeah, Tim Bowles did come in, did he not?
Yeah, he came on
originally.
So,
I mean, we're entitled to say when people don't want to come on for whatever reason. But let's just hope they do come on in the future.
Including Marvin. I don't know, I feel like I'm being boycotted by these people. I don't know if they actually sit there and they go, well, we're not going to do that. We can't have boycott him. I wonder what you think. Oh, come on, I don't think so. No, surely if they can answer, they can answer a few basic questions.
Maybe they don't want to talk to us because we actually have an opinion.
Well, you do wonder, listening to the BBC sometimes, that they're not cross-examining them, they're not really asking, I mean, the really difficult questions, like ones about, for example, about election fraud. We've got 30 potential arrest warrants being served on sitting Conservative MPs at the moment. We don't really hear a lot of that on the BBC.
Well, let's not forget, it's interesting you raise that, Tony, the Charlotte Leslie's escapades while in office, the bung from the Bristol Port Company, and being dyslexic, and she seemed to get away with it in the thing, and then the Speaker gave her a slap on the wrist. I mean, obviously a politician going places.
Well, maybe, maybe not. But, I mean, you're a bit of an expert on the port. You're an ex-merchant navy, aren't you?
I am indeed, Tony. I am indeed.
Yeah, well, tell us a bit about you. Give us your take on what's been happening over there, because there was maybe even some of the figures, because it did seem when George Ferguson was mayor, there was a pretty dodgy deal down there. And the city, how much money did we as Bristolians lose in that deal to sell off
the
port?
Let's look at the whole beginning of the effect. Let's go back to, well, I think it was Micklewright was in charge of the Labour Party controlled council and had to lease the port out. And Bristol Port Company came in with the aid of our good old friend who bought the board mills at the time, Mr. De Savary. Bought them and sold them overnight, if I remember correctly. Made a nice big healthy profit. And come in with the two merchants, Mr. Ord and Mr. Mordaunt. And they took
and these are actually directors of the Bristol Port Company.
They are the owners. They are the actual owners of the port. They are the two owners of the port.
I wonder how much their shareholding was boosted by the acquisition of all that Bristol City Council, our land.
Oh, millions, hundreds of millions. I mean, it was a giveaway. It was the biggest bonanza that the port could have ever opened for, 2,800 acres of land for $45 million, I believe it was, for the original lease. And then an extra 10 for the freehold, $55 million. Not a bad deal.
Now, also, I've been looking, I mean, there's various different publications around the city. I wonder if you'd like to plug any of them. We've got the Bristol Post, haven't we? We've got Bristol 24/7. We've got the Bristol Cable. What else have we got? The Bristolian, too. Now, I was actually looking at some the Cable the other day and comparing it with the Bristolian. I think the thing is, it may be that there may be some inaccuracies or exaggerations passed through the Bristolian editorial board. But to me, it's so much more of an entertaining read. And when you're reading about, I think, about crookedness, corruption, you know, politicians who are just on the take, have sold out all their promises, which they so often seem to do, that for me it's the Bristolian every time, because even if it isn't entirely 100% true, it's an entertaining read.
Well, the Bristolian is very entertaining. As you know, I enjoy reading it. I mean, let's look at, you say this is not exactly true. Let's look at the one that springs to mind, the market office fraud, where it was denied. George,
just take us back to that story then, the market office fraud.
Well, there was money going out of missing out of the markets office. The whistleblower came out.
Well, what is the markets office, first of all?
Well, it's what's in charge of St. Nicholas Market. What have you. But it just wasn't that. Only the market office in the end. It ended up cash in transit as well. And substantial amounts of money were going missing. And as you know, the Bristol auditors were saying, no, it's all accounted for. And this went on for some time, year, 2 years.
Now, let just me tell you, as a journalist, you know, you read something in the Bristolian, you try and check it out. Nine times out of ten, you're going to the source. You go, say, for example, to the Bristol City Council press office. They put you in touch with an officer who will say, oh, well, this just isn't true. Yeah. So it's difficult to run, obviously, with a story when you're getting someone in officialdom who should know telling you that it's nonsense.
They do know, Tony. They're not going to tell you. And this is the beauty of the Bristolian. It's satirical, isn't it, really? It's a bit like Private Eye. We expose it. We say it as it is. I mean, what do you want? Do you want the truth? Or do you want the truth sort of brushed up with a bit of holly around it? It's better to have the truth, I think.
So anyway, back to the market story. So was it proved to be true?
Yes, it was. I mean, God rest his soul, the poor man who was, and it is tragic that a man felt he was being blamed himself, who took his own life. And no one in that council stood by to support him. Of course it was true. I mean, not long afterwards, the auditors admitted it was true. I forget the word they used, misappropriation, I think, or something like that. But was there a police investigation? That's the more important thing. No, there wasn't.
Was there a police investigation into the sale of Bristol Port?
No, there wasn't. And yet that was stitched right up. You know, it was a done deal.
Do you think it's as simple as that the police thinking, well, we get most of our money from the council tax and council taxpayers, so maybe we should look the other way?
I think we got a police commissioner who does look the other way. Let's be serious about it.
This is Sue Mount-Stevens.
Sue Mount-Stevens. Again, interestingly enough, did not win the support of the Bristol people and won her second term of office from the surrounding areas, a bit like Mr. Balls. today.
Martin Summers, this is a bit... I mean, I'm looking at, for example, we've just had the result from Birmingham too. Birmingham is pretty much solidly Labour area. And yet, by extending these city areas into the surrounding countryside, which of course is mostly like kind of Air Surrey stockbroker belt kind of areas, where all the rich people live, it looks as if they've actually done a, played a bit of a... Sorry?
More like Harborne in Birmingham, I think.
Yeah, okay.
Slightly
It's like they've actually played a blinder, haven't they, by doing this? And of course, it was all part of Tony Blair's original agenda of devolution, you know, things to do with Scotland, etc., when he was in power. This is part of that. And what they've done by extending the areas of the city out to sort of, I don't know, 30, 40 miles out from the city, what they've done is they've taken what were solidly Labour cities and now turned them Conservative.
Well, in actual fact, it's a bit reinvention of the wheel because, of course, Avon, the counties that used to be Avon, were an area, and the Tories didn't like that because eventually it led to a situation where, you know, the Bristol could dominate the region around it. So they got rid of that, but then they've brought it back in under a more controlled system, which they think they can control. We're going to see a lot more gerrymandering if the Tories win the general election, because they're going to redraw the constituency boundaries based on the existing electoral registers. And as everybody in this room will know, in inner city areas and poorer areas, less people are registered, lots of people aren't registered, and the new boundaries will be drawn upon the existing electoral registers, which underreport the number of people living in the inner cities and in poorer areas. So it'll be gerrymandering, very similar to the sort of thing that used to go on in Northern Ireland before 1969. And they flagged it up in words of what, you know, words of fire 10 feet high, that's what they intend to do, because this is what happens in the US, which is where our politics is going. As soon as the Republican Party wins, they redistrict, so you get all these very weird looking districts which are kind of funny shapes, you know, S shapes as in L shapes, to make sure that their people always get elected. That's exactly how it was run in Northern Ireland before 1969, and that's how the Tories intend to run Britain, just like the US. Everything rigged.
Oh dear. Well, I hope not. Kerry, look, how long have you been in Hartcliffe?
All my life. Do you really want me to tell you how
Well, no, it's okay. No. But I mean, what changes have you seen over the last 10, 15 years or so?
Well, I've seen it all. You know, growing up as a child, it was quite a nice place to live. We had Soames Avenue and it was lovely. And then, obviously, years later, we had the famous Hartcliffe riots. And people seem to remember that. You can go anywhere in Bristol and they either don't know where Hartcliffe is or they say, oh, that's that dodgy place where they had the riots. And, yeah, there has been little bits of improvements, like we've got Morrison's and we've got B&Q and lots of chain stores, but not a lot's changed apart from that. There's still a lot of people not working, lots and lots of poor people. You know, we've got the lowest uptake of internet. You know, most people take that for granted. You know, I myself have only just had internet put in my home because it's unaffordable.
Now, you say dodgy place. Is it a dodgy place?
No, obviously every place has got people that let it down, you know, that give it a bad name. But the majority of people that live in Hartcliffe are absolutely amazing. I've moved around quite a lot of times. I've had lots and lots of neighbours. And, you know, some of them are still my friends now. Even though I've moved, you can go anywhere in Hartcliffe and ask somebody and they will help you. If you're lost or you need something, if, I don't know, you move house and you've got no furniture, that they will rally round and they will furnish your house. They are absolutely amazing.
That sounds pretty good. I wonder if you get that up in Bradley Stoke or one of the slightly more wealthy areas. Anyway, what about Avonmouth, Steve?
Well, Avonmouth's a bit like Hartcliffe, really. And I'd like to pick up on the Hartcliffe first, my mate Tony, because I've been spending a bit of time over to myself. And Avonmouth, in some ways, is quite a bit luckier in Hartcliffe. It's got a lot of work in industry down there, where Hartcliffe's got nothing. But I think if you look at the way Marvin and Asher Craig introduced the cuts into Hartcliffe, was barbaric, is the word that springs to mind. You've got people, as Kerry's already said, that it's got the lowest internet take-up anywhere in the country. So you've taken away the rent office where they can pay their rent, those that pay their rent. They've now got nowhere paying their rent other than they go to Temple Street or go to the post office, which is the PayPal system, and it takes a week to get onto your account. But as a direct result of closing that rent office, people are now finding themselves in arrears with their rent. But they're also finding themselves receiving letters from the housing department threatening with repossession. And I know of one case that has been threatened with repossession that's been told they have to go to court soon, but it's not a direct result of anything they've done. It's a direct result of what Marvin and Asher have done. So are they going to step in and stop this case going to court? I doubt it. More money. I mean, all the court fees are paid. You know, it's...
I mean, surely, I mean, some people might point the finger at places like Hardcliffe, Avonmouth, and say, well, the people there don't want to work.
Well, I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, that's the easy option. I think in any community, there'll be a fraction that don't want to work. But I think the majority of us living in a civilised society want to work and earn our own cost of living, you know. We don't particularly want to be on the handout system. But unfortunately, some of us end up there. Not through choice, through illness or what have you.
I mean, I suppose the other question is, where are the jobs?
Well, the jobs are in Avonmouth. And that's going to be where the jobs are always going to be, because that is the mentality of council. Avonmouth is brown belt, and it's going to be utilised at all it costs with the partnership. It's going to be the waste dump of, you know, Europe, the southwest. It's going to be an expanding port for the merchants who are going to make millions and millions and hundreds of millions of pounds. And where does the community sit amongst all that? Deprived. Because, interestingly enough, in the Public Health England report, Avonmouth, as the ward, is described as some of the most deprived area in the United Kingdom. Well, how is that? It's a hub of industry. Why is it deprived?
Well, I imagine it's probably because the port is now containerised, computerised, you know. Well, I imagine that, you know, you'd have one person doing what, you know, 500 dockers used to do.
Yes, true. I mean, that's very true. But let's also look at it. Industry doesn't want to give back to the community. It likes to take from the community, but gives nothing in return. And then we're on the subject of that in the council. And let's look at the bottom ash plant that's been illegally built. Illegally built. A day group bottom ash plant that was served a peace planning convention notice.
Okay, so what is this plant?
Well, this plant is going to handle bottom ash, and it turns it into building aggregate. And as we all know, with bottom ash, it will contain some very nasty stuff.
Well, so what is bottom ash? Does
well, bottom
sound
ash is what's left over after the incinerators have burnt the rubbish.
Ooh.
So whatever's in the rubbish is in the ash. So if you've got nuclear waste in the rubbish, it's in the ash. So if we all start glowing down at Avonmouth, we know there's a problem. But there is a problem, no, seriously. The day group have gone ahead and built this plant against the advice of the council. And we've got two local councillors. Unfortunately, their neighbour, Joe Sargent, Donald Alexander, both new to the council. How can I put it in the politest terms to both of them? The politest terms... about as much use as glass eyes to a blind man. That is the politest term, because they are totally and utterly useless. I have to be honest, there's no point in mixing words. You know, we expected them to sort this out. A year on, they're still twiddling their thumbs. Because the truth of the matter is, they don't know what to do. You know, and they're inept at what to do.
Totally out of their depth.
Thank you.
So, I mean, what happens if this plant just gets built anyway?
It's built,
is it? And it's getting, is it starting to belch out its various...
No, because the EA cannot license
this is
an unlawful building.
And the Environment Agency.
Cannot license an unlawful
building. Well, I imagine
building.
They will now be fighting a battle to get their planning permission, won't they?
Well, they'll go for retrospective, I'm sure they will. But, as I said, as it stands at the moment, it should be dismantled. If you built an house tomorrow morning in your back garden and it was up and all the roof was on it and everything, what do you think they would say to you? Well done, Tony. What are they going to say to you, Tony?
They'll say you have to take it down or we'll demolish it.
So why are they not saying the same to the day group management?
Well, maybe they're a little bit tighter with the day group management.
No, let's put it in perspective. The brown envelope's just been a bit bigger. It's been going around the department.
My brown envelopes are obviously not big enough, are they?
No, they're not so many.
Anyway, but Martin, it's a serious point in all of this, and that is that the incentive to work seems to be disappearing. As I was saying again with the Roundtree Trust earlier, problems with people actually saying, "Well, if I go to work, if I go to this job, I still can't afford to pay the bills."
I think the fundamental problem is rent. The rents plus council tax is a huge chunk of money, and people used to have access to social housing which had a reasonable level of rent, but that's gradually been creeping up.
But if you're on a low income, surely you don't pay council tax in Bristol?
Well, no, you do if you're working. If you're not working, and it's only because the council has decided that it's going to keep that benefit. In actual fact, in other parts of the country, you have to pay council tax if you're working or if you're not working. Although people who are living on benefits, that benefit is only supposed to cover your very basic needs. So how are you supposed to pay council tax out of that? I really don't know. But of course, in Northern Ireland, all local government is funded through the rates, which is a property tax on the wealthy. And they didn't dare to introduce poll tax and council tax in Northern Ireland. It caused riots in England. It would have caused an absolute chaos in Northern Ireland. So they never introduced it. And of course, in Northern Ireland, Sinn Féin are going to refuse to participate in the new assembly. And they're going to say, right, we're not carrying out the cuts. You, English government, James Brokenshire, you couldn't make the names up, could you? You're going to carry out the cuts and we're going to oppose you. And coming back to pick up on what others have said, the problem for the Labour Party in the cities in England is that we didn't go to the people and say we're going to defy the government. And I think the problem is that the people weren't necessarily ready to defy the government. It's not just a problem of leadership, it's also a problem of bottle by the ordinary folk. But of course, in Northern Ireland, it's a different story. Sinn Féin are going to refuse to participate in the English government of the six counties and refuse to carry out the cuts. And they're going to do the same in the Republic as well, because they're not in the government there.
Could, I mean, whilst you're on that, could even be looking at a United Ireland now with Brexit.
Well, I think that's over-egging it a bit, but Dublin have pushed this with the Germans, because, of course, the Irish taxpayers bailed out the German banks, they owe them one, and they're definitely going to push for a soft border. I don't think there's going to be, I don't think anybody's really talking about a United Ireland out of this. It's going to be six counties are going to have a special status. Possibly they can stay inside the EU whilst remaining inside the UK. And that's what the Germans and all the others are going to demand for Theresa May when she gets her mandate. But of course, she won't have any mandate for Northern Ireland or Scotland. And so she'll be negotiating with those people with their knives in her back.
Just a reminder, folks, 3 months ago, our marvellous mayor, Marvin Rees, promised he was going to be on this show right now, tonight. He was in his diary and everything, and then heard earlier on this week from Sam Eddy, his PA, that no, Marvin will not be on the programme, and no reason given. So there you go. Let's have a look at the other candidates in the Metro Mayor election that we've just had today, with Tim Bowles, a Conservative, winning. Leslie Mansell for Labour second. She was, let's see, 6,000 votes behind, just about 6,000 votes behind. Sorry, 4,000, roughly 4,000 votes behind. The next in line was Stephen Williams on around about 40,000 votes. So let's just read out this. 53,000, this is on the first preference. 53,700, that's 53,800 roughly for Tim Bowles. Leslie Mansell, 43,500. Stephen Williams then on 40,000. John Savage, independent, on 30,000. And I wonder whether maybe John Savage has done quite well because of the sort of independent line of that George Ferguson adopted, Lord Ferguson, I nearly said there. George Ferguson adopted when he was mayor. Being an independent seems to be quite a good thing to be trying to do around Bristol. Darren Hall for the Green Party was next after John Savage on 22,000, and Aaron Foote for UKIP on around about 8,000. But Martin, what do you make of Stephen Williams? He's actually come quite close there, hasn't he?
He has, I think, because it's not a properly proportional vote. It's only the last two. It's a bit like the French presidential election. It's only the last two that can be counted in the final runoff. And if you actually look at that, the Tories haven't got a 50% majority. They've managed to squeak home under, and of course a lot of Labour voters will have had a Lib Dem second preference or whatever, and if the Lib Dems had come second, they might have beaten the Tories. So it's a rather perverse setup, which has led to a situation where the Tories, with less than half the vote, end up running the show. But then that's an awful lot like how the mainstream system works. We get used to it in this country. The Tories have never won a majority in Britain. Never. They've never had one. But they run the country most of the time. Now, why is that then? It's because the system's basically rigged.
Now, I've just had a little thought, and I'm going to do this in every one of these politics shows up until the general election, is I'm going to invite at least two candidates from the two main parties to all of the programmes, see if they turn up, and I'll tell you each week if someone has turned up and if they haven't, because I think it's only fair that you, as listeners, know that someone has been invited and they've decided they don't want to come. This seems to me a very worrying trend, Steve, in our politics in this country, where you invite somebody on to the TV or radio, whether it's a national debate or it's our little pipsqueak of a show here in Bristol, that they say they actually don't. They would rather go and knock on doors than speak to people via the radio.
I just think a lot of these people get above their station, to be honest, Tony. I mean, I look at the two councillors, and I say, I'm not going to name them, but, you know, when they were out canvassing for the vote, they were going to do so much. I've done very little. I mean, even Marvin, with Marvin, if he ran the mayoral vote again today, would Marvin Rees be elected? I don't believe he would. I think, as much as I had no time for the man, George Ferguson, God forbid I ever say this, at least he had to get up and go, you know. This man's like a wet drip, as I said, with a couple of puppet masters behind him.
Okay. Yeah. Also, Martin, I suppose we should be looking at some of the other stories this week with the EU particularly. I'll tell you what, as well, one thing I should do is look at the membership of some of the main parties as well. Just got something flashed up on the screen here, which I put there earlier. Conservative Party, 120,000 members. Actually, no, let's start with the highest number of members for a political
Labour Party.
Labour Party, 640,000 members, right? The next highest is Conservative Party, 120,000 members. And how many of those got to vote in the leadership election? Zero. Because there was no vote in the leadership election. Theresa May was crowned Queen of the Conservative Party. Next on the list is the Liberal Democrats on 87,000, roughly. That's the latest figure we've got for the Lib Dems. Next is the Greens with 53,000 and UKIP on 40,000. So, I mean, there's an amazing gap between Labour and Conservative. Martin, why is it that Labour can't deliver at the elections? You've got all these foot soldiers, apparently. We're talking about roughly three or four times the number that the Conservatives had, and yet you still can't win these elections, particularly this Metro Mayor one here.
Well, I mean, we did quite well in the Metro Mayor election, to be honest, so that's not really a very good...
You didn't win.
No, but I mean, we wouldn't be expected to win that. This is a largely rural electorate we're talking about, apart from Bristol City, so we didn't do too badly. I think that Corbyn definitely does appeal to a certain segment of the population,
well,
mostly in urban areas.
Well, there are some in your own party that don't even seem to believe that.
Well, I know, but they've been shocked and awed by the fact that the Labour Party has got a vast reservoir of support that it owes to previous generations, and when those people feel as if the party's actually standing up for them, then they're willing to support it. I mean, one of the problems we had is when they brought in the welfare cuts and they were going to cap the number of children they were going to pay for and all the rest of it, the Labour Party in Parliament, a large section of them, abstained and refused to vote against the government. The Liberal Democrats voted against, but the Labour Party, people like Kerry McCarthy, abstained because they took the view that their electorate is actually quite down on poor people and they therefore shouldn't be seen to be defending the poor. Well, it's not surprising that in the inner city areas, people are going to, you know, sod you, we're going to bring in Corbyn to...
So do you think things like that might mean that people like Kerry, or actually more likely Thangam, might be actually threatened by having a... by the Greens and then get a Green MP?
I think Thangam is going to have a hard time beating off Molly Scott-Cato in Bristol West.
Well, you heard it here first, though. Well, you didn't hear it here first. Anyway.
I agree with more, but I think Williams could do a resurgence.
Yeah, he's probably going to stand again, but yeah. I think the Liberals haven't done very well across the country in this local election.
They're taking a bit of a bang in the day.
The Richmond by-election, they look as if they were on a bit of a rebound, but it doesn't look too good for them. From
positive
what we've seen,
is not looking good for UKIP.
Well, yeah. I don't think it's looking good. Well, they've gone completely.
They haven't got any case. That's the positive.
Disappeared, isn't it?
Can we have the rerun of the Brexit vote?
Okay.
Let's see where it stands now.
I mean, many people say, well, they've got what they wanted. So
of course
anyhow,
you did.
Anyhow, let's have a listen now to Theresa May this week, because she's been to see the Queen.
I have just been to Buckingham Palace for an audience with Her Majesty the Queen to mark the dissolution of this Parliament. The 2015 Parliament is now at an end. and in 36 days, the country will elect a new government and choose the next Prime Minister. The choice you now face is all about the future. Whoever wins on the 8th of June will face one overriding task: to get the best possible deal for this United Kingdom from Brexit. And in the last few days, we have seen just how tough these talks are likely to be. Britain's negotiating position in Europe has been misrepresented in the continental press. The European Commission's negotiating stance has hardened. Threats against Britain have been issued by European politicians and officials. All of these acts have been deliberately timed to affect the result of the general election that will take place on the 8th of June.
Well, she's saying, Theresa May there, effectively, that there's a deliberate attempt here for the Brussels to be interfering in our general election. Let's have a little shorter quote here from the Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn. Because I'm sure he's got something to say about this. Anyway, Steve, what do you make of what she just said there?
That was rubbish, more garbage, but sorry, you know what I mean? At the end of the day, it was never going to be an easy Brexit. We are going to pay a price. Are they capable of negotiating? I don't think so. Not for the better of Britain.
OK, so let's have a listen to Jeremy Corbyn now.
We will negotiate a Brexit that works for all, for the many, not the few. We won't threaten Europe on the way into Brexit. And above all, in this election campaign, we'll put forward a proposal and a plan for Britain, which is about dealing with inequality and injustice.
So there's Jeremy Corbyn. The other person involved in all of this, of course, is this chap called Michel Barnier. He's sort of appeared from nowhere, but he's the guy they're going to have to deal with at the European Union.
Some have created the illusion that Brexit would have no material impact on our lives, or that negotiations can be concluded quickly and painlessly. This is not the case.
Oh, sounds like he's saying wait for the pain. What do you make of this, Kerry?
I'm not really sure what to think. I voted to leave, not because I'm a racist or anything like that, and quite obviously not a racist, but a lot of people that did vote to leave are being branded racists, but not all of us are.
I think we can expect pain. What do you think, Steve?
Oh, pain. Trust me, there's going to be lots of pain.
Martin?
Yeah, I think it's not just Brexit. What people should have really thought about all along is we had a big dose of quantitative easing after the Brexit vote, and if we hadn't, the housing market would already have collapsed. The housing market's going to collapse, and even if the Tories win the election, they're going to have lots of squealing toddlers to deal with afterwards.
And it's time now for the Murdoch News at 6. Thanks to our guests there, community activists from Hartcliffe, Kerry Bales and Steve Norman from Avonmouth. After the Murdoch News, a German soldier's arrested for acts preparing terror attack at Vienna Airport.
BCFM on 93.2, online and on your mobile. BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour. Live from the Sky News Centre.